The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Now, are you sitting at the beach? What do people look like at you when you let out your scream?
I want you to know that everybody, whether they're at the beach or Westwood or Beverly Hills, everybody is like a 9 or a 10. Everybody's bronze, in shape, they've got a good tan.
Right.
Even the ugly people are eights, so I want you to know that.
So
that's about as low as you get.
That's why you're out there, because you like to be in a place where you fit in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm more like an 8+.
Right.
But everybody's good looking, whether they're working or not. Everybody's tan and fit and just having a good time out here in Southern California, that's for sure.
And wearing 19 pounds of makeup for no particular reason.
By the way, I broke my thumb. It's purple now, I think.
What?
Yeah,
did you actually break it?
Well, it hurts.
Yeah,
but
right.
Is it a hangnail?
No, it's actually purple because I was playing basketball and the basketball bent it back like crazy. So
maybe
all
you should catch.
Yeah, I can't play right now. I'm going to have to take a couple of days off. Thank goodness I had no basketball plan for this week, to be honest with you. Otherwise, by the way, if you guys want to move out here, my brother, who's a real estate agent, was having an open house. He has an offer on this place and two backup offers, but you can still get in. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath, 2,000-square-feet house for $1.55 million.
Yeah.
So, as soon as you want to – it needs a little bit of work, but, what can you get for $1,550,000 nowadays? Really not much.
I'd rather live in Beirut than California. I really would. That is my idea of hell on earth.
Did you see that – by the way, my whole family lives in Southern California, as does Arnie's, so thank you for insulting
me. But I hear Beirut. Rude, it's nice this time of year.
Insulting the land of my birth.
Yeah.
Says the guy who was born in Springfield, Mass, the armpit of New England.
Jeez. Did you see, Arnie, that California is now the world's fourth biggest economy? It's like the United States. Yeah, California now has more of an economy than the UK.
Oh, how funny. How funny. It's amazing what you can't afford to live out here. You have to be making some serious dough to afford a two-bedroom, one-bath, 2,000 square feet. Might as well be homeless in a square box, and that's like $50,000. I mean, geez, it's ridiculous, the prices out here. It's crazy. Who can afford it?
My aunt is coming up from California this week, so I'll see if I wonder what her house cost back in back in the 70s or whatever.
You could retire on that. By the way, remember I told you I had to pay $150 to get my suit altered? I'm so mad at my wife. She said, first of all, I always wear those Ray-Ban sunglasses and regular glasses. So she goes, I want you to get new glasses. I want you to get new glasses. They're too big for your face. I don't know. I've had these for like 3 years. I don't know why. So I had it in my mind that I was just going to get new Ray-Ban frames, $150, walk out there, and that's it. 1 hour later, I'm in for about $920. Ba-boom! I am such a sucker. I'm like, well, do I have to get lenses, or can you just transfer them from my other glasses? No, you need all new lenses. Okay, do you want transitions? Okay, give me transitions. Okay, give me the other kind that turn in the sunglasses. Give me the kind that I can read up close, like bifocals. Okay, give me the good pair, too, that don't scratch. Okay, I'll take the insurance in case it breaks. Boom, it's like $900. I have to do it my eye test. It's ridiculous.
Did you charge it all to your mom or something?
Yeah, yes, buddy. I put it on my mom's American Express. But that's beside the point. I'd be mad if I was paying. It's ridiculous.
I'd be more mad if I was paying.
Yeah, $150. I'm walking out there with a $900 tab. And he goes, I'm going to take $20 off because you're a good customer. Oh, thank you.
It's like getting a ticket for anything. Oh, $20, that's not bad. And by the time they have this fee and that tax and that added, it's doubled.
How many tickets are you getting? Oh, you're talking about like
just
a game
ticket. Anything, like a concert or anything.
Yeah.
There's no such thing anymore. It's just paying $20 for a $20 show.
I thought you were talking about like a ticket for an infraction.
No. By the way, I didn't mean California. I meant L.A.
Yeah.
I'm hearing about it. I didn't. As far as Beirut, I didn't mean California.
Oh, people are giving you a hard time. So, huh?
Well, I love California. I spent a week in it, most of it, 6 weeks ago, and it was absolutely stunningly beautiful if you're up in, you know, the mountains. But L.A., man, I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
You can't afford – if you can't afford to live in the nice areas, then you're really in trouble. And 90% of the people can't afford to live in the nice areas. It's ridiculous. I mean, everybody drives a nice car here. I don't understand that. How can everybody afford to drive Mercedes and Beamers and Lexus and Audis? And it, I don't know how everybody can afford – in Burlington, Vermont, everybody drives like
– Subarus.
Trucks or, yeah, Subarus.
Proudly.
Or a Prius.
Yeah, or a Prius up there. Nobody's all. I haven't. I think I've seen one Mercedes in Williston. That's it.
Oh,
I mean, nobody drives fancy cars up there.
I don't know about that.
People on our sales staff, multiples of them drive Mercedes.
Yeah, it's gonna
get out of here.
And the Beamers. I always know the Beamers are out because they're always 6 inches off my bumper.
Wow. Yeah. I don't see people driving fancy cars. Certainly don't see anything like really, really nice.
Arnie,
like
the sun is getting to you.
Really?
Yes, the sun is getting to you. You realize that we live in a place where people go on vacation. Like, it's a nice place. People...
Oh, I understand, but I mean, it's not a showy place, you know? I mean, people may have money, but that doesn't mean they're like, hey, let's go get the nicest car and drive it around.
It's a showy place, but you can only show it for 3 months of the year because the snow's on the grass.
No, that's what you're right. It's a busy show, busy weekend, Brady. Tell me what we got coming up this week, and let's get going.
Well, remember, Burger Bar tomorrow, trivia night, 7:30 to 9:30. If you're a St. Mike student, you're unwinding from finals week, you're welcome to come out. If you're a townsperson, a local, you want to come out and watch the games with us, we'll be watching Sox and Yankees. Red Sox, Yankees, while we're there at the Burger Bar, the two best teams in baseball, that's going to be what you want to do and join us there, 7:30 to 9:30. Arnie, you'll be back this week, I'm told, finally.
Yes, woo-hoo. Finally. Woo!
Man, I miss the big guy.
Oh, my brother's like, why don't you stay another like couple more weeks? Like, I can't stay. I got to get back. Enough.
Remember, mistake of the day, you want to get in. Jake and Williston won it last week, but you can get in and qualify daily by texting in 802-655-6672. You can try to win that baseball cap, the 101.3 ESPN exclusive, thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for today, we'll talk about Bill Parcells with some interesting comments on the Patriots. The Bruins see their season end. Rich was crying before the show started.
Yes. Oh, Rich, sorry.
Should the Red Sox go after Matt Harvey? Monday Mirage is at 5:20. But first, the Celtics, they go for the sweep tonight. And I will say this, Rich, you'll appreciate this. So Jess and I went to Elgato.
Yeah. I saw the Facebook post.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
We went to Elgato in Essex.
Five Corners, yeah.
Yeah, right at Five Corners. There's two Elgatos, one in Essex and one in downtown right off Church Street.
Yep.
So we went to the one in Essex. And Arnie, since it's Cinco de Mayo,
right,
we got
course.
Out there at about 3 o'clock.
Wow.
By the time the Celtics game was in the fourth quarter, I was multiple discounted Coronas deep.
Nice.
So we're at the table, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go and just kind of see what's up with the Celtics because I wasn't at a great vantage point. I had already asked the waitress to change the TV to the closest to me to the Kentucky Derby. I felt guilty about asking her to change it again to the Celtics.
Oh, that's what you got
to
do.
So I walked over to the lobby, and as soon as Jaylen Brown steals the pass right before regulation ends, I screamed, jumped out. I went, whoa, whoa. And all these people, by this point, there's like a 30 people wait to try to get into Elgato.
Oh,
and,
how funny.
And I'm staring, I'm just sharing the lobby with them. I'm screaming. Then Bellinelli hits the bucket the other way to send it to overtime. I'm going nuts about that.
Yeah, confetti, baby.
And then I go back to the seat and I'm following it kind of lukewarmly. And then we go back over there and I see Horford's bucket, which is effectively the game winner. In overtime, I screamed out again. So lots of people at Elgato were happy to see me leave.
For that hour or so in the fourth quarter and overtime, I got absolutely nothing done. I'm painting the entire interior of my house and just lifting everything out so I can move. And,
are you handy, by the way?
No, but I'm learning to be.
Okay.
I really And I'm learning how turpentine works. Believe me, you should have seen these hands yesterday afternoon. Just covered.
Did you get the varnish and the spackle and all that?
Yeah, the whole deal. You would have been impressed.
Oh, my goodness.
But I'm trying to paint, and I have to keep stopping, and the paint is flying all over the place and landing on the rug, and I have to clean it. I mean, it was just – you couldn't possibly look away from it for 1 second. That was – I mean, obviously it's not the greatest Celtics game in their history, but I mean, it was one of those you just had no choice but to watch. It was wildly entertaining.
Oh, it was great. Brady, before I get into my rant, can you do me one favor? Can you look up and see, and I'm being serious, I really think that the Sixers should have been assessed a technical foul because of the confetti. Can you imagine? No, I'm serious. Holding up the game for... Could you imagine winning the game on a technical foul because they put confetti onto the floor? Oh, my goodness. I really think, though, that they could have been assessed. Now, if it was a regular season game, I bet you they might have been assessed a technical foul.
For delay of game?
For delay of game.
I mean, it's funny. I never thought of that, but that's not necessarily as far-fetched as you might think.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
oh,
but that's nobody's fault on the court. So I'm not giving a technical foul that's going to cost the game based on some guy sitting at the scorer's table waiting for the button.
It's his only job.
Fans have been assessed technical fouls.
Yes,
for running out to the court and stuff like that. They've been they have nothing to do with the game, and they've been assessed technical fouls. I'm telling you, I don't know. I think could you imagine the grief they would go through? I just want to say this though. First of all, congratulations so far to the Boston Celtics. What they're doing is unbelievable. Brad Stevens, I believe, is the best coach in the NBA. He is doing the most with the least I've ever seen in my entire life. That being said. Shame on the Philadelphia 76ers. I said this on my national show. Not only are they overrated and Simmons is overrated, their fans are overrated, the city's overrated, and cheesesteaks are overrated. This is like one of the most embarrassing series for Philadelphia I've ever seen in my life. To go ahead and to have turnovers like this, and Simmons had 1 point in game two, and I know he bounced back a little bit in game three, but the turnovers and the mistakes and it's just like they weren't mentally into it. Boston's a better team, mentally stronger, and they're just putting it to them. I mean, this is just – and by the way, it's the first time a underdog has won the first three games in the series, so I'm assuming if the Celtics get a sweep, it'll be the first time an underdog has swept the series. I think the Celtics have been doing fantastic, unbelievable what they've been getting away with now. That's unbelievable.
Okay, is he done?
Yeah, I'm done.
When
I'm
you
sorry,
say rant, I wait for you to take a breath.
So, yes, go ahead.
No, the thing that brought me great joy as a Boston sports fan was just the look on those fans' face. They kept showing all the fans in utter disbelief. And, of course, that's, you know, the same fan base that had the Eagles defeat my Patriots. So it was, I don't know, it was a little bit of sweet revenge. Not much, but at least a little bit. But, I look at that as Boston with an amazing victory. But, really, if you're a Sixers fan, man, that is rip-your-heart-out stuff right there. They had so many chances to win it. And so many dumb mistakes. It's funny because the biggest one happened so quickly it wasn't even mentioned until a day later, which was Ben Simmons getting that offensive rebound and putting it back with 18 seconds left. All you had to do was drive away and run out the clock and we're done.
Oh, wait, you're talking about the miss, right?
Talking about the Embiid miss followed by the offensive rebound. And look, he could hit 99 out of 100. There was a 5-foot putback shot from the side.
Right.
But
right.
You can't take that shot. You've got to be smarter than that. Nobody even talked about it at the time.
I mean, Simmons, I'm not going to call Simmons overrated, okay? He's played 1 year in the NBA. There's a difference if he's not living up to your expectations, but he is not overrated. What we're seeing right now is that he does have a flawed game. We see that players have flawed games. He needs to develop an outside shot in the same way that Giannis Antetokounmpo needs to develop an outside shot. You weren't calling him overrated. Now, I know he still scored 30. I'm well aware there's a big difference between 30 and 1. But when we talk about young players that are in their first, second, third years, there's room for development there. The biggest separator to me in this series has been, one, the experience of Al Horford, and two, the experience of Brad Stevens. Those, to me, have been the biggest difference makers in this series. And I think they have accounted for a lot of what has transpired in this series. What Horford has done to Embiid, both offensively and defensively, is important. And what the positions that Brad Stevens has put this team in are important.
I'm going to disagree with John because you said 1 year and you can't tell if somebody is overrated in 1 year. People right now are telling me that Lonzo's overrated. I can't disagree with them. People are telling me Markelle Fultz, overrated. I can't disagree with them right now. Maybe it will turn out that we are wrong 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. But as of now, I got to say you're spot on with those two guys. I actually agree with Simmons is overrated because here's a guy that had he's the next Magic Johnson. He's a guy that can play point guard. He's the guy that's going to take Philadelphia to the next level. Philadelphia is the next team, the next darling out there. You know, all that. Maybe it's a little unfair, but that's the way the media painted him. That's the way the fans are painting him. People are jumping on that bandwagon. Well, look what's happening to him now. They're not only are they losing, they're losing to a team that really shouldn't not only beat him 3-0, but should be behind 3-0 with all the injuries they've had. I got to tell you, if I'm a Philadelphia fan, I'm disgusted with what's going on,
well,
guys.
Well, and you know, you talk about Ben Simmons. The thing that's jumped out at me is obviously the one-point performance and all the turnovers.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of doozies in Game 3 the other day. But, I mean, his defense, it's just an absolute revolving door. The point differential, 76ers, when Ben Simmons is on the court in this series, the Sixers outscore the Celtics by 31. When he is not on the court, no, it's plus 31 when he's off the court. It's minus 55 in favor of the Celtics when Ben Simmons is on the court.
I'll stick with overrated. Okay?
That's a huge number in just three games. That's a lot of points.
Arnie, the difference. Look, I understand Ben Simmons is 21 in his first full season, whereas LeBron was 19. But you look at Ben Simmons. In his first full year in the NBA, 15-8-8, okay? That's pretty darn impressive. When we throw LeBron's first year out there, and just using LeBron as some... I mean, would you call LeBron overrated? Yeah, he averaged 21, but in his first full year, he averaged 5 rebounds and 6 assists. Ben Simmons is better than him as a rebounder and as an assist man in his first full season of the league. You can't make it a judgment off the guy being overrated or not one season in. I don't call guys.
You disagree with me with about Lonzo and Markelle Fultz. If somebody, I mean, the show's today, so if somebody said, "Do you think those guys lived up to expectations or are overrated?" You'd say, "Yeah."
No,
overrated.
There's a difference between being overrated and not hitting expectations. Markelle Fultz played 13 games via injury. You don't even have a sample size there to make a judgment on.
Right, but it's more than just that.
Yeah.
But I understand,
And the fact that Markelle Fultz hasn't played 1 second in this series is, I mean, what's he going to be next year? Is he suddenly going to start playing like the number one overall pick? And we're going to look back and say he was held out for the entire series in a conference semifinal his rookie year?
By the way, how about, and I don't want to just change subjects, but how about the play that Stevens drew up
Horford
at the end of the what was it? Was that in the overtime to give him the lead?
Yes.
Yeah. When he had him, oh my goodness! It was like I drew it up. That was Brady. You must have loved that. That was fantastic.
Just like it. Yeah.
And understand this. This is an unbelievable stat that I was able to come across. This should count as no surprise because according to Second Spectrum, who somebody actually keeps track of this, Rich, the Celtics have an NBA best 57.1% effective field goal percentage on sidelines, out of bounds plays on the fourth quarter and overtime.
Wow.
Brad Stevens is a wizard. That's all. I've been saying that for 2 weeks and a month. Brad Stevens, he just puts his guys in the best position to be successful. And I think the biggest disparity has been in coaching between Stevens and Brett Brown.
And the best statistic, I've never heard of the term ATO. Now I'm hearing, I've heard it 100 times since Game 3. I had no idea what ATO is.
Tell everyone what
it's
it stands
after
for.
After timeout.
Yeah.
And the Celtics had some unbelievable amount of scoring percentage out of the timeouts.
I wonder what the bad team's percentage is scoring after the timeout. I didn't know 57% was good. I had no idea. If you would have asked me, I would have said, "Oh, after a timeout."
No, that's 57% is on the sidelines, out of bounds plays.
Okay. I mean that's still, you know, I still thought maybe it would have been higher. We don't know what it is after a timeout, though. You said, or
no? Rich is saying that they've been talking a lot about the Celtics' prowess in scoring after a timeout. And yeah, that's something that we have heard a lot about.
And a lot of these plays are complicated. That Horford play wasn't him just running under the hoop and hitting the shot with a nice pass from Morris. I mean, there was a lot going on. If you watch that play in slow motion, all five Celtics guys had a major role in that winning bucket.
And I think it was Covington who he just took right to the cup.
And how close did that ball come to not going in?
Nearly.
It started rolling out. I thought, you've got to be kidding me.
I know.
I mean, it was like a miracle. All of a sudden, it just rolled back in.
And remember, Game 4 is tonight, early time, 5:30, the pregame show over on 960 The Zone, Arnie.
By the way, do you want to start with what Glenn and Moncton said? Simmons not even a true rookie, and Tatum is younger. He had like 4 20-point games in a row. I hate that Simmons is going to win the Rookie of the Year. It bugs the hell out of me. Sorry, guys.
Now you're opening up a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, I know. I just since we got on the Town Fair Tire text line, Brady, I don't know where you stand. You probably like that he's still a rookie because Ichiro got Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, it's fine. It doesn't bother me. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me either way. I think Tatum is a player right now that is better for what the Celtics needed at the time, and it doesn't even matter because they weren't drafted in the same year, but people saying, oh, he was clearly the number one over Fultz. Well, no, not necessarily. The Sixers needed what Fultz could bring, and the Celtics needed what Tatum could bring. Tatum is special. He's playing with a good crop of teammates around him, and he had Kyrie Irving for 60 games this year. Let's not forget that also.
Yeah.
And he's playing with a better head coach. So I'm just not interested in those kind of debates.
All right. We're off and running on a Monday. Former Patriots coach Bill Parcells speaks. What did he say? You're going to want to hear this. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on.
Everyone is listening to the huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month.
All right.
This is the huddle with Rich Hardy and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday. We're into May. By the way, is the weather getting better out there or what, for crying out loud?
Rich is in heaven today.
It's 62 and cloudless.
It's a lovely October day.
Oh,
that's what it feels like.
Absolutely perfect.
We should be playing football today rather than baseball, Rich.
So
it doesn't feel that great.
The 83 and sunny out here isn't very good then, I'm assuming.
Too hot.
Yeah, Rich likes
a little warm, yeah.
Rich likes wearing snow hats and parkas all year round
with shorts.
Yes.
Rich, how do you deal with Arizona when it's like 100 degrees? Have you ever been there when it's 100 degrees?
No, I'm there for spring training every year, and it has hit 90 a couple times, and
wow.
I hate it. I was not a fan of it, but you know what? It's better than what was at home at the time.
I can see you turning red like a lobster.
Yes. That is correct. I have never had a tan in my life. Not one. I get freckles.
That.
Do you get freckles instead of a tan, or do you just tan?
No, I would. No, I tan if I had.
If I was
out consistently, I definitely tan.
Nope.
I'm a big time tan boy. That's for sure. Not anymore though. My legs are white as a ghost. Brady, Bill Parcells speaks. What the hell's going on here? What did he have to say?
Yeah, Bill Parcells, former Patriots head coach, also head coach of the Giants. He was talking to Gary Myers, longtime writer today, and the piece appeared in The Athletic, and they asked him about a couple of different things, including Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. So Gary Myers says, how much longer can Belichick and Brady keep this going? And Parcells, paraphrasing, says, I wouldn't underestimate them. Their track record is illustrious. You know, things come to an end. We all know that. Then he said that, they had a lot of players last year who were out because of injury, and don't underestimate them because this year they have a lot of people coming back, and there's no one in their division that can overtake them. So that's a long way towards doing something special.
You know, in a way, he's right on that. And I know Brady and Rich, you guys are just blue in the face yelling at me about this. But my comparison to Tom Brady and the Patriots is a lot to LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers. A lot of people think LeBron and the Cavaliers had easy roads because they played in the Eastern Conference, which is a lot easier. And I've always said that about the Patriots playing in the AFC East, and I guess in the AFC Conference, which is a lot easier. Is that a good comparison or no, not really?
Well, except you're eliminating half of the equation in the coach, the combination, the Belichick-Brady combo. I mean, Ty Lue. Is that who we're talking about here? Is the legendary combo with LeBron?
Right. No, I'm letting that part go.
Eric Spoelstra.
It just seems like, I mean, a lot has to do with coming around at the right time when they're dominating. Cleveland dominating the Eastern Conference, and Brady and the Patriots dominating the AFC.
I don't think about it like that. Yes, the Patriots have played in a poor division. Let's also remember, some of the division seems poor because the Patriots have been in it. So there's also a chicken and the egg scenario there as well. Obviously, the Patriots can do this for, I would say, between one and three more years. I think it's that simple. They can do it as long as Brady is still upright and able to play.
That's the thing that everybody just forgets, is everybody complains about the AFC East, But the reason why their records are bad is because there's a team in that division every year that finishes at least 8 games over .500. And they do most, about half of their damage against those teams.
Is there another division where a team is pretty much dominated like that? I'm just trying to rack my brain right now.
Not with this kind of consistency. I mean, it's cyclical and generally.
Pittsburgh maybe, yeah. But not.
No, because Baltimore had been so good for so long.
Right. But, I mean, you could still win the division. Baltimore could finish second. Yeah, there's a few times you're not going to win the division. But I guess the Patriots have dominated the AFC East like nobody's business. What else did Parcells have to say, Brady?
He also talked about if he thinks that the Patriots' tumultuous offseason means the beginning of the end is near. And he says, I don't pay attention to that. Nobody knows what's what exactly. You hear gossip and conjecture and opinion. I don't put much stock in that. Having been in a position myself as head coach, a lot of things are said about an organization, the coaching staff, and the owner, and some of those things are just flat out not true. Yet they get out and publicize because they make good headlines.
Yeah.
The only thing you do is watch the product on the field when the season starts. All the off-season stuff doesn't mean anything.
Is Parcells the coach? Did I miss something here? he's talking like it's the like he's the coach or the general manager or the owner, and he's upset about a reporter asking a question or something
that. No, why is that wrong? What's wrong about that? That what Brady just told you that Parcells said. I mean,
it makes it sound like he's talking on behalf of the Patriots, not on behalf of being a former Patriot coach. It sounds like I don't pay attention to that. Why not? You're not a coach right now. You're not in the NFL. Why wouldn't you pay attention to what people are
saying?
Maybe
because 90% of the things that are said about the Patriots are to sell papers and make, and clickbait.
Oh, Rich, see, that's way too fanboy looking at it.
Really?
Though. You know that
Brady's not coming back. Gronk won't come back. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on for months.
You are well aware, though, that things have actually negatively happened to the Patriots. You're aware of that, right?
They lost Amendola. See, everything is black and white to me with the Patriots. I don't care what the rumors are about what's being spread around and who's mad at home. Just play.
Okay, so it's not it's black and white that Amendola said that Bill Belichick is a blank, is an a-hole. That's not. That's black and white.
How is that a surprise to anyone? I think he is too.
Yeah, yeah.
But him, but he said that it's reported and out there that Gronk really did contemplate retirement. That he really does feel underpaid and undervalued. Giselle says on Tom versus Time, he just wants to be appreciated. Those things really happen. So again, and both things can be true. There can be problems, but the organization will still go on and can be successful. One doesn't have to mean. That it doesn't have to affect the other. All I want is Patriot fans to admit, yes, there have been problems. That's all I want.
I want to know what you thought about Parcells. Doesn't it sound like he's talking about on behalf, like he's upset, like he's still talking like he's a head coach somewhere or something like that?
Well, he hated all that crap when he was the coach, too. He hated them. I mean, he had a uneasy relationship with the media. I mean, you saw him get mad at the media all the time about questions, speculative questions.
Yeah, I think that's just a 76-year-old guy who remembers what it's like to be in that position. And I also remember he's a guy who at one point had a close relationship with Belichick. So I think he's going to go out of his way to defend him in certain ways and say that it's not that big a deal. And you're right. When September 1st comes around, I will say this stuff, now the offseason doesn't matter. But at this point, Tom Brady skipping now two sets of offseason workouts. At this point, as Arnie says, the show's today. It does matter.
Show's today. What was the last thing that Parcells had to say, Brady?
This is the thing I think that was actually the most interesting. So I feel bad that we buried the lead on this. But Gary Myers says, you would build a team in New England that was loaded and had just gone to a Super Bowl and then you left. Do you wish you had figured out a way to get along with Robert Kraft and stayed a few more years? He goes, I regretted leaving the Patriots because there was a pretty good young team. We had a good quarterback, a young quarterback. We had Curtis Martin, a premier running back, a lot of speed at receiver, a great tight end, up-and-coming defense, Ty Law, Willie McGinnis, Teddy Bruschi. It was a long time ago. I don't look back. Temporarily, it bothered me, but I'd probably do things differently now if I had to do it again.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting. Absolutely.
What would he do differently? What exactly is he going to do?
Well, not leave.
Relationship? Well, no. Better relationship with Kraft or do different things personnel-wise. Maybe I didn't understand
I think
that.
It was he would try to work out some sort of better balance and a compromise sort of atmosphere with Robert Kraft. Because from what he said, he wanted to take Tony Brackens in that 96 draft. He ultimately went with Terry Glenn, and that was a big deal to him. And he wasn't able to get past it.
And I think just I think a better better attitude with management and a better attitude with the media also and his players. Remember, he called Terry Glenn she. He said she's coming along.
Yep.
Probably also stems from the fact that he didn't want to take Terry Glenn in the first place.
Right.
But not understanding the players, not relating as well to the players, and not having a better working relationship with Robert Kraft. And he aired Robert Kraft out in the media on his way out and said, you know, they want you to cook the dinner. They should at least let you shop for the groceries.
Right,
that was
right,
his favorite
right.
line, or that was his
iconic line.
His
yeah.
iconic line, his yeah. best quote, I think. And that was eminent in the 30 for 30, the two Bills, where we saw Belichick and Parcells together talking. You could tell there was a little bit of regret there about how he related with Kraft and his exit.
I mean, when you think about the timing of when Parcells left, he was sitting on a a Super Bowl bomb right there. I mean, in some of the names you just mentioned, it was all starting to come together at that point.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, but look at the first name he brings up. He said, yeah, young quarterback, blah, blah, blah. But Curtis Martin, a premier back. Notice that was the first name he brought up as he knew how big the running game was back then.
Yeah, and Arnie, I still think that and then the three down back was more of a was
right,
more of
right.
an important part of the game. And Curtis Martin also could catch passes out of the backfield. So before
True.
We counted on our running backs to catch out of the backfield, Curtis Martin was able to do that. Now, Rich, I was only 6 years old at the time.
Oh,
so
me too.
So I got to ask you then. I mean, when you looked at Curtis Martin in New England, did you think this is a skill set that we really haven't seen out of a back?
Oh, absolutely, because at the time, Drew Bledsoe was throwing 55 passes a game. I mean, as soon as he was drafted number one, it was just bombs away, and that's what they did. And I believe that was about the same time. I'll have to check. But I think, was he saying a good young quarterback? Is he talking about Bledsoe,
yes.
I assume?
Yes,
yeah,
because,
yeah.
Assuming, yes. And, I mean, you talk about Curtis Martin. He was awfully good. But, I mean, all I remember about Drew Bledsoe, the first couple of years he was here was throwing 50, 55 passes. You'd think his arm was going to fall off. So even back then, when you had guys like Troy Brown, but I think the thing he was talking about, and this is what Parcells loved so much, it was defense. You know, Ty Law, McGinnis, Bruschi mentions all these other guys. And they all went on to have Super Bowl success.
Yeah. Long careers.
Yeah.
Brady, I know we don't have time to get into some Yankee stuff. I know you say some of the stuff they're doing historic. I said last night, and people have called me an idiot for this, and maybe it was a stupid comment.
It wasn't for that, Arnie.
Well, it could not be, but maybe not. But I said, is there any way that this team ranks up there with the Garrick and Ruth teams of the old New York Yankees, the way they're doing things, or is that completely asinine?
That's pretty asinine.
To call this team Murderer's Row, I would say it's still asinine.
It's beyond asinine.
But, Jay, you said they're doing some historic things, and they put up some big numbers out there. I don't know. All right, maybe that was asinine. Maybe I deserve what I got last night. Brady, what's coming up next?
Should the Red Sox make a move for Matt Harvey? Some people say
what?
It makes more sense than you might think.
Some people said that a year and a half ago. We'll get to that coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3.
Studies show that listening to 101.3 ESPN makes you more productive. And we'll prove it when we get around to it. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Everybody, you are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday, 7th day of May. So much to get to, so much going on. Bruins eliminated, Celtics have a game 4. Red Sox off to a phenomenal start, though the Yankees are on their heels. And we're not too far from the start of football. Brady, don't you have any... Remember last year when you said we're closer to football than we were from what?
We were closer to the next season than we were to the past season. I don't feel like that's going to come up until about June.
Man,
June, July. Oh, you can't get me excited. You can't give me some stat like just another 90 days or something. Come on, Brady.
What gets me excited about football is your excitement is the draft was last weekend. That's your excitement.
Jeez, oh my!
Rookie mini camps are going on in some places.
I missed the draft talk already.
Yeah.
Oh, you're lucky, Rich, because I almost put in the Pro Football Focus grades of both the Patriots and the Giants draft.
Today?
I would have liked that.
The Patriots were given an average draft, and the Giants were given an above-average draft.
Oh, by what? Wow. One of the 64,000 people that were grading it?
Yes, Pro Football Focus.
Okay.
And they're the big ones.
Oh.
But
all right, what's up with the Red Sox and Matt Harvey? Where did that come from? Because I've only been saying that for like a year and a half now, and you laughed at me.
Well, Matt Harvey is now officially in DFA limbo. He's been designated for assignment by the Mets, which means they have, I think it's 7 days. It used to be 10, but now I think it's 7, to trade him, or he then becomes a free agent and then can sign with another team. So Jen McCaffrey of The Athletic wonders if maybe the Red Sox should take a flyer on Harvey. And the reason why, because this. Number one, the Red Sox now are used to helping players come back from thoracic outlet syndrome, which is one of the things that has plagued Harvey. Remember, Tyler Thornburg is going through that rehab right now, so the Red Sox are in a unique position. And Thornburg, by all accounts, looks good, so there's thoughts that maybe the team doctors could help Harvey in the same way they helped Thornburg. And then also, Brian Bannister, one of the pitching advisors for the Red Sox, has a history of kind of helping, you know, helping guys who are reclamation projects, from Rich Hill to Doug Fister. So on both fronts, maybe the Red Sox could get the best out of Harvey. The real question is, Arnie, do you think they should take a chance on Matt Harvey?
Well, of course. I've only been saying this for how long now? Seriously, about a year and a half, and you guys slapped me down and hit me and said, what are you, a moron? Matt Harvey?
I don't recall that.
I did.
You don't? Oh, you don't recall
you slapped
that.
Him and called him a moron?
He wanted to trade Mookie Betts for him or something, if
no,
I'm not mistaken.
No, not Mookie Betts. But you know what? And I was going to bring this up, Brady. We may be too – the Red Sox may be too late to pick up Matt Harvey. And you're like, what are you talking about? He's now hit dirt bottom. You buy low, you sell high. If they would have gotten Matt Harvey last year, they might have been able to get rid of a piece of the puzzle, like a Price or something like that, where it would have been some cap room. Now, the Mets are like, hey, we're not taking Price or any big contracts. You want to give us a minor leaguer, we'll take a single-A guy or a double-A guy. That's about it. So I think the Red Sox should take a flyer on him. It's just kind of like what's-his-face, Verlander, that went from Detroit, where he was pitching lousy. Once he got to Houston, it was like a whole new Verlander. So I would take a chance on Harvey.
Verlander has never fallen as far down as Matt Harvey has.
Was I wrong, Brady?
That's a little extreme. I think, I mean, well, go ahead.
Verlander did have a bad stretch, but he's not been... Justin Verlander did not have Tommy John surgery like Matt Harvey did. He also did not have thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing, Tommy John surgery.
Not always, but in 27 games since coming back from thoracic outlet syndrome, Harvey's got an ERA of 6.77, okay? I mean, he has been rough. He's allowed he's got an ERA of 7 this year and has a bad attitude, whether it's partying too much, whether it's him refusing bullpen assignments or refusing the minor leagues. He has been missed workouts multiple years ago. Matt Harvey has been bad news at times. All I will say is this, Arnie. Matt Harvey is a reclamation project. I think there's a good story in there somewhere for him. I think there can be a good ending at the end. You're not going to do it on my time. You're not going to find yourself on my time unless you're willing to go to the minor leagues right off the bat. And that's what got him out of New York. So who knows if he would do that. If Matt Harvey would say, I will go to the minor leagues and fix myself there, then I would take a flyer on him. But right now, he's due $5.6 million, and he's a free agent at the end of the year. So I got some financial skin in the game.
$5.6 million is chump change. That's nothing.
Not to a team that's trying to stay under the luxury tax. I'd rather use that money at the trade deadline that I have available than at that rate. But nonetheless, if he's willing to go, Rich, to the minor leagues and find himself there, then I could take a chance on him. But you've already got questions in the rotation, as you guys told me, about Price and Pomeranz. I'm not inserting Harvey in there. Where is he going to fit in this bullpen, especially when Thornburg comes back? I got no room for him until I know he's good.
Right. He's just got to eat his ego, finally. And it just sounds like he hasn't been able to, despite the fact that he's getting absolutely hammered. I mean, if you're the Red Sox, whatever they are, 25-9, everything's great. It seems like the clubhouse is great. Alex Cora has been great. The players rave about him. Do you really want to bring in a relatively expensive, injury-laden attitude with a 7 ERA? Even if he does go to Pawtucket, I mean, maybe try it and send him to Pawtucket, but if Harvey isn't willing to go to Pawtucket, then screw him. Go somewhere else.
You guys got
to,
you know, be prepared just in case, you know, it's like saving for a rainy day. You're like, ah, it's not going to rain in Southern California. Well, eventually that bad day is going to happen. And then what are you going to do when the Red Sox are stuck because they need another starting pitcher? And you guys told me there's nobody in single A, double A, or triple A for them to bring on up.
You can't just,
you know, say, well, you know, well, then we're screwed. I don't know what we're going to do. You got to have a little reserve in the tank. You can't just go to bare bones, nothing there, guys.
You went out and found Doug Fister last year and made him relevant. I could find somebody else who's got it. I mean, Fister at least is a sterling teammate and a good pro, which is something that Matt Harvey hasn't proven to be at all. Look, if he's willing to eat the ego, as Rich said, and go to the minor leagues right off the bat, then I'm willing to give him a shot. If he comes in here and expects to be my fourth or fifth starter, then no thank you at all. If he comes in here and expects to be in my bullpen, I don't have room for you, and I've got Tyler Thornburg coming on the way who's far better than him at this moment in time. I'm not bringing him in to, as you said, a likable clubhouse, a guy who could derail that clubhouse with his attitude. And, by the way, also, Arnie, so do you like to tell me the show is today?
Yes.
As of right now, they are one game up on the New York Yankees with the Yankees coming. I'm not putting a guy with an ERA of 7 in my rotation willingly and just say, hey, I'll punt a few games here while Harvey tries to figure it out. And then, by the way, I've lost first place in the process.
He's coming whether you like it or not. He'll either pitch for the Red Sox or he'll pitch against the Red Sox with the Yankees. So you better make up your mind, because there's no doubt the Yankees will swoop him up for $5 million and have him as reserve. I promise you that.
You're guaranteeing that Matt Harvey, that's like me guaranteeing Saturday that the Bruins would win game 4. Oops. So you're telling me that Matt Harvey will either be a Yankee or a Red Sox pitcher by what, the next weekend?
Probably by then. Right. I mean, really, I mean, those are the two teams that could probably use him the most. I don't see
Not true at all.
Well, let me finish. I don't see the Astros going after him. And I'm talking about teams that could go ahead and really have a legitimate chance of winning a World Series, okay? Not, you know, some of these phony teams that are looking pretty good after like 35 games or something like that. So I don't think the Astros would want to touch out with the 10-foot pole. Maybe the Indians, but they're having problems right now so much. And the only other team maybe I could see it would be the Angels, but they don't need him in the starting rotation. So where would he fit in, Brady? What team would say we really need Matt Harvey?
Well, the three teams that are being rumored for him are the three teams that could probably use him the most. One is the Texas Rangers, who Bartolo Colon is their best pitcher at the moment. They could use a starter.
They're last place.
Is the San Francisco Giants, who just now found out Johnny Cueto's out 6 to 8 weeks, in addition to Madison Bumgarner's 3.5-month injury that he's got this year. They could use him. And unfortunately, number three is my Mariners, of the worst starters ERA in baseball right now. So they could be going after him.
But they're not World Series threats. There,
but
really.
Matt Harvey doesn't. Yeah. You know
it's
what,
not
Matt
his
Harvey?
Choice.
Well, it is his choice because he'd be a free agent.
No, but I mean, okay, go ahead.
It is his choice, and if he wants to hold out and say, I only want to play for a contender, then that's his prerogative. But he's not good enough to anchor a contender's rotation right now.
Eventually, it won't be his choice. There's not going to be. I mean, saying that he's going to either be on the Yankees or the Red Sox by the weekend, it's not real.
Why is that not real? You don't think the Yankees would love him in the rotation?
No. Where do the Yankees put him? I mean, Sonny Gray is suddenly Cy Young, so that solves that problem over his last couple of starts.
And by the way, you talk about risk-reward. $5 million for a possible guy where 2 years ago, this was the hottest. He was one of the hottest pitchers in baseball. We're not just talking on the Mets. In baseball, this guy had a two-year stretch. What are you hiring?
He had two good years. Two very good years. Yep. 13 and 15, I think it was.
Yes, and at one point, Arnie, Mike Gillisley had 3 touchdowns on opening day for the Patriots. So, things do change.
Wow, Stewart and Firstberg, what in the world did Arnie drink? What do you mean, what did I drink?
Absolutely.
What did I drink? What are
you drunk
about?
On the beach? You are.
It wouldn't make sense, for crying out loud. All right, when we finish off hour number one, we're talking about practice. That's right. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here. I don't know what.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. It's a Monday, 7th day of May. Cruising right along. The summer is upon us. Weather finally getting a little bit better. But first, Brady, we're just talking about practice, my friend.
16 years ago today, one of the most iconic sound bites in all of sports history.
In here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not a game. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we talking about practice, man.
I love that.
Classic.
Today it's still a classic.
It is.
Right, so, I love that, man.
16 years ago, and we've got some other great ones on our button bar here that I like to drop in from time to time. But obviously, these are some ones also, Rich, that will take us all back.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me?
So that's Jim Mora.
Former
head coach of the Colts.
It's already been addressed. I've already talked about that.
That's Belichick. I just love throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Then let's see. Mike Singletary.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
That's one of my favorite ones. I love that one. I like that one.
Then Herm Edwards, of course.
Hello. You play to win the game.
Then
what about Denny Green? We had him on the hook, and we let him get away, or something like that.
It was what it was, or whatever. What was it?
They were who we thought they are. Who we thought they were. Let's see. We got this one.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
that was 10 years ago.
That was Mike Gundy, the coach of Oklahoma State football. Yep. And then I really love this one, Mike Ditka.
There's three quarterbacks in this football team. Whichever one starts. Whichever ones don't, we'll back him up. Period. Cut and dried. It's nobody's concern but ours. Nobody. Next.
Injuries from the game.
Talk to the trainer. Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
Good.
Okay. If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood too. What next?
Get to the point. I love it.
And then one more, Arnie. We've got Mike Leach, the head coach at Washington State.
That's a good win. There's a lot of people. It's like Woodstock, except everybody's got their clothes on.
I love that. The best one ever, though, and Rich, you'll remember this. I don't know if you remember, Brady, when they asked Tommy Lasorda, what did you think of Dave Kingman's performance? And remember that one, Rich?
I guarantee you we couldn't play that.
Well, there's a version where they bleep out all the curse words, which is like about 50 or 60 of them.
It's literally like every third word.
What do I think
F-bomb.
Of Kingman's performance? What do I think of Kingman's performance? And then he goes into a cursing tirade. He goes, does that answer your question? He goes, yes. He goes, well, it shouldn't. It's a bad answer. And he's just going back and forth. And it's hysterical. That you should find that, Brady. It's,
yeah, but be careful.
Sure yeah. You got to take the Queen version on that.
The edited family version of that one.
Exactly. It's funny as hell. Hour one in the books. Brady will have a Sports Center update. We'll come on back. Great story about what somebody won in horse racing. Plus, Mookie Betts. Did you see that injury? Unbelievable. We got a lot to get to. That's coming up next. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in, and the huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Arnie's here. It is a Monday, 7th day of May. Lots to get to. Monday Mirage is coming up at about 20 past the hour. You'll certainly want to stick around for that. Good last story standing. We're going to tell you about our newest contest just one second. Guys, I just want to tell you a quick story. Obviously, the Kentucky Derby was over the weekend. Johnny Avello, the executive director of the Wynn in Las Vegas of the Race and Sportsbook, he was on a Vegas show, and a guy calls him up, a big respected horse guy calls him up, and he says to Johnny, Johnny, I got a horse I want to bet in the future book. This was about 4 months ago. And Johnny says, I'll give you 250-1. And the guy goes, come on, Johnny, come on. And the guy goes, fine, I'll give you 300-1. That horse was Justify. And that better bet $500 to win, I believe, a total of $150,000. Now, that same guy that was smart enough to bet that in the futures tipped off another guy who bet and won $350,000. So the guy went to him and said, how do you like my tip I gave you? The guy said, thank you very much, and didn't give him a penny.
Didn't
give him a penny.
Did you see the woman bet $18 and won like $1.2 million?
Yes. How does that happen? What happened there?
She hit the pick
Quinella
five
or something.
Yeah, it had to have been the pick five. Okay. No, yeah, five consecutive winners.
Five consecutive winners, or it was the exact order of the five consecutive superfecta.
Superfecta is four.
No, you're right. Okay, right. So it was the five, and one of them was a 39-1 long shot that won. That's why it was so high for the $1.2 million. So
that being said, what a mess that was, huh? Wow.
I tell you this. One time, my friend was going into the Army. We had no money, and he's like, you know, we wanted to go out drinking and have some fun. So we went to the track, and, you know, like I just told you, there's the pick six. And I go, we're never going to win the pick six. Let's bet the pick three. And sure enough, we won the pick three. And I'm jumping up and down, and my friend's like, how much should we win? How much should we win? I go, it's got to be half of the pick six. And the pick six is like $100,000 or $200,000. When I went to cash in my ticket, it was like worth like $1,000. I was so disappointed. I'm like, are you going to give me the rest of the check? And the lady's laughing at me going, no, honey, that's all you're getting. Good luck on that. So I was bummed out about that. You're not a race guy, though, are you guys? You don't go to the track. Brady, you go to the track when you were in Albany.
Yeah, I would go up to Saratoga a lot. And I never really won anything, though. Betting horses is so hard.
I know.
It's such unbelievable. Even the ones who have skill in it hit such unbelievable luck. I mean, you're better off going to the casino and playing cards.
Right.
That you give you betting is so, betting horse races. It's like the Flintstones episodes. Don't bet on the races. So that's how I feel about now.
Flintstones reference from a guy in his 20s.
Oh, I loved the Flintstones.
Really? Hey, wait, take it another step further. I know the episode you're talking about. What was the kid's name that was running all the gambling action and Fred was losing all the money?
Probably Arnold.
That's exactly what his name was.
And the one he bet the money on was Sabretooth. So that was
of course it was.
So, hey, real quick, Rich, you'll appreciate this, I think. Before we're going to reveal our next contest in 2 minutes. I'm going to take time. I have to vent on something.
Yeah.
And, Rich, I don't know if you've ever – I'm sure you've noticed it, but I don't know if it bothers you like it bothers me. I have a major bone to pick with baseball television broadcasts. This is so unbelievably infuriating to me. I hate when the reliever comes out or when the starter comes out of the game and instantly when they come back from commercial break, they put up, well, here's the line on the starter. But then there's like other runners on base. Like, don't show me his final stats until he's actually cleared out of the book. Like,
in other words, runs.
Yeah, it's like, don't tell me, oh, Chris Sale went 6 1/3 innings and allowed one run.
Right.
But then there's bases loaded when he leaves and then a grand slam gets hit. It's no longer 6 1/3 and one run. Don't show me his final line until his line is actually final.
It's funny. I've never thought much about that. I get crazy about dumber things than that, but I've never even really noticed it. But that is a somewhat egregious mistake by the networks. They should know better.
Don't tell me the guy's final line until his line is actually final. And the Mariners broadcast does it every time. They're like, well, Felix today went 5 1/3 and gave up 2 earned runs. No, he didn't. He ended up giving up 4 earned runs because the 2 runs after it that the guy inherited scored.
Well, what you're supposed to say is, and he's gone 5+ innings in, or whatever it is, 5 1/3, and he's still responsible for the runners on 2nd and 3rd.
Yes, but I just show me what his line – like when – then this closes the book on Felix Hernandez or whatever. I don't need to see his line as it stands at that moment.
Maybe we should have 2 ERAs, one when you're pitching and the other one is when you leave, but you have runners on base or something like that.
I think this bothers Brady because his ERA would have been a lot lower if he hadn't left guys in, and then the bullpen would come in and blow it for him for the Lakers.
Yeah, but that would actually have worked out to my advantage because they would have said I gave up like 1 run instead of 4.
But your ERA wouldn't show it. It would show those 4 because little Joey, the freshman, came in for Oswego and let them all in.
Hey, conference champion Oswego now. They just won the Suniac. So
I'm feeding the frenzy here for you.
All right, Arnie, you want to announce?
Yeah.
Now,
Don't have Arnie announce anything.
Rich and I planned our newest contest, and we elected not to tell you what it was because we knew you can't keep a secret.
I didn't even know we were doing a contest, announcing our contest. So, I had no idea.
Just because I feel like getting everybody in the mood for it.
Now the phones are going to ring crazy.
Yeah, nobody call in right now.
No.
Here's what we are doing starting tomorrow. Starting tomorrow in the AM, we are offering our listeners the ultimate Fenway fan experience. The ultimate Fenway fan experience. We kick it off tomorrow. Rich, go ahead and tell our listeners what they're going to win.
Well, first of all, you and a guest will win those premium box seats, you know, the zillion-dollar bosses box seats behind the third base dugout at Fenway. And that will be for a game between the Sox and the Tigers on Tuesday, June 5th.
Nice.
But that's not all. But wait, there's more.
Tell what else they get, Rich.
Well, I'll tell you. You get a hotel in Boston for that night.
Nice.
Yeah, and you also get an exclusive tour of Fenway Park.
Oh, and that's cool.
So do they let you in behind the scoreboard in left field? That's always been my dream.
Oh, they're going to get...
Is anybody buried there like they have what's-his-face buried at Giant Stadium?
I think Manny's glove might be there somewhere in the scoreboard.
More than his glove, I'll tell you that. But also, you get to be on the field during batting practice before the game. So you get prime box seats, Sox Tigers, Tuesday, June 5th, a hotel for the night in Boston, an exclusive tour of Fenway Park, and you get to be on the field as the Red Sox take batting practice.
Mean? So, like, when they're taking, do you like shag fly balls or you stand behind the batters? How great is that? You're on the field?
You're on the field. Field level as the Sox take BP. So, you'll have a chaperone and, you know, maybe you'll get to hobnob with the players. Or maybe you just stand by the dugout and just watch JD Martinez just pepper balls over the monster. But you'll be on the field for batting practice. And here's what we're going to do. Starting tomorrow morning, 3 weeks long, we're running this contest. We will get three qualifiers a day. Three qualifiers a day. So what's going to happen, Rich, is this. Is you're in here in the morning, so you're going to come on the air at some point during Golic and Wingo, which is between 6 and 10 a.m.
Yep.
And you are going to give the Red Sox player of the day.
Okay.
The Red Sox player of the day. And then three times throughout the day. One time during Golic and Wingo, one time in the middays, and one time during the huddle. We'll play the cue to call. You call in with that Red Sox player of the day, caller number 5, you qualify to win that ultimate Fenway fan experience.
So, simple enough.
Wow.
So you are going to come on in the morning and say, you know, good morning, everybody. I'm Rich from the huddle. Our Red Sox player of the day is whoever.
Not at a set time.
Not at a set. It rotates every day.
Okay.
It rotates every day.
I feel strongly that I can handle this responsibility.
But I will tell you this. If you listen to the huddle, we will tell you when that Red Sox player of the day gets announced the following day. So be paying attention right now, because I'm telling you that it's 7:25 tomorrow. Rich is going to come on and Golic and Wingo and give you the first Red Sox player of the day.
That's a lot of pressure. I have to remember.
Wow.
Yes. 7:25.
I'm nervous.
You know what? I'm setting my alarm right now for 7:24 a.m.
7:25 tomorrow. Rich comes on with the player of the day, and then at some point during Golic and Wingo later after 7:25, you will hear that cue to call. You will call in, try to be caller 5. We'll do it again in the middays, which is after Golic and Wingo, between 10 and 3.
Yep.
And then when we come on at 4, so either the 4 o'clock or the 5 o'clock hour, you will get another chance. So the ultimate Fenway fan experience again, premium box seats on the boss. They are Tuesday, June 5th. Against the Tigers, a hotel in Boston for that night, an exclusive tour of Fenway Park, and you are field level while the Sox and Tigers take batting practice. That is we've done a lot of contests. This is the one I think I'm the most pumped about.
There's only one more thing I would want to do. I'd say, hey, if they're making a pitching change, can I drive the cart onto the field with the new pitcher and make the pitching change? How great would that be? You tip the cart over or something like that? Would that be awesome or what? Huh?
I saw somebody actually used the cart this weekend. Was it Arizona? What
was it? I think it was Colin McHugh.
That's right. Of Houston.
Of Houston against Arizona. Right. Yeah, that would be great, Arnie, except the Red Sox don't have a bullpen cart right now.
Oh, they don't have a bullpen? Right. Well, I thought they were bringing them all that back to baseball this year, Brady.
You can just carry Joe Kelly in by yourself.
Certain teams.
Wow.
Certain teams have them. It's like less than three teams, though.
Very disappointing. I can't believe the Red Sox don't have one. Did they used to have one? Do you know?
Yes, they had a little golf cart with a Red Sox baseball cap on it. It was great.
So, Arnie, we love our idea. We love our contest, but we couldn't tell you what it was. And you know what I like?
Wow.
You know what I love about this contest, too, is that this contest is good for anybody to win it. I mean, you can... You and a buddy, you and the boys can go out and you know, you and a boy buddy can go out and have some beers and be on the field at batting practice. You can take your significant other, and it's a great date that's once in a lifetime.
Yeah, you'll win her over with that. Yeah.
Father's Day is coming. Can you imagine father and son
perfect
out on the field at Fenway for batting practice? Imagine, that's making memories right there.
Imagine a date, though. Hey, honey, I just thought I'd head down to the field and hang out with the boys. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah, you're coming, too. So, hey.
Wow.
What if, like, wow, what about this? What about if you're about to propose and when a guy wins it and he proposes during batting practice?
They did that yesterday in that exact situation, and Andrew Benintendi was in the middle of it.
Oh, really?
Yes, and she said yes.
Did you hear about the Cubs player, Wilson Contreras, by the way, who got married but he had to postpone his wedding twice because they scheduled makeup games on his wedding day? Did you hear about that?
It's not to fool Mother Nature.
I love that. All right, that is awesome. So looking forward to that. Brady, get to Mookie Betts, because I don't know what the heck happened. I saw him get hit in the back. Next thing I know, he's holding his wrist. I'm like, what the? Am I missing something? What's going on?
Yeah, very odd yesterday. It was in the first inning, and Mookie Betts ended up playing another inning, but he ended up leaving the game for the Sox as he gets hit by a throw. So he's on first as a grounder to first, and the Rangers' first baseman steps on the bag, throws to second, where they're going to try to tag Mookie. Ball hits him in the back of the shoulder, back of the right shoulder.
It's like the shoulder blade.
Yeah. And then he goes down and he's holding his wrist and flexing his wrist. And it was very odd. He's got a bruise in his shoulder, but I don't know why he was holding his wrist, Rich.
Well, I think it had something to do with after he hit the dirt. He gets hit in the right shoulder blade, and he kind of landed awkwardly on his right hand when he fell. So that may have had something to do with it, or he just had some sort of a numbing sensation, which supposedly David Price had after that Yankee start, where it just shot right down his arm. I have no idea, but it was weird because it looked like he was pretty badly injured when it happened. But then he pops right back up, stays in the game, eventually scored. I think it was Mitch Moreland who drove him in with a double, and then he hit again in the second and smacked the ball pretty well, but you could tell he was in some definite discomfort. You lose him and look out. That would be very bad news.
By the time the ball hit him in the back, before he finished getting to the base, I yelled, "Season over." So that's how quickly it was. Season over! There you go. Before he even got to the base. That's how bad it was. You can't lose it, that's for sure.
Well, it was another good win yesterday for the Sox. And by the way, on Mookie, he leads Major League Baseball in homers with 13. A National League executive told Buster that he thinks Mookie Betts is the best player in the American League over Trout.
Wow.
There are...
That's not true anyway. But.
There are a lot of debates I'm not willing to have. Like, I will not have or listen to the LeBron versus Jordan debate anymore. I just won't do it. Yep. But if you're going to tell me that Trout is not the best player, and not only in the American League but in all of baseball, I will have that with you. Betts is incredible, but no one's better than Trout.
But it's getting there. I mean, if you look at their game, it's very similar. You know, there's a lot of speed. They're both incredibly athletic. The difference is Trout looks like he's a bulldozer. I mean, clearly the guy spends a little bit of time in the weight room.
But the Mookie's funny part is you would take either one of those guys with the number one pick, Rich. You would take Judge before you would take either one of those.
Not true.
No, I would take Trout in a heartbeat.
Trout is the number one pick in every fantasy draft in America.
Well, fantasy's one thing, but if we're starting a baseball team, Judge is number one for my pick, and I'll work from there.
I will give you this caveat. If I can say, if all of these players are in a fantasy world where all of these players are going to make the exact same dollar amount, because right now Trout is making 198 times what Judge is making. So if you want to give me value that Judge is better than Trout, if they're all the same, Trout, you are the only person in America that would take Judge over Trout.
What about Altuve? Where'd you put him?
I would still take Trout.
Complete game. I would take Trout too, but I would put Altuve in the top five.
Altuve's in the top five.
That's amazing. You would say I'm the only person in the world that would take Judge. Do you understand, if I'm correct about Judge, you're looking at the next home run record of total home runs in baseball, and it's going to be Judge?
He started too late.
That's what I... Well, how old is he?
He started too late. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like 26.
Well, yeah,
you're going to see another five. You know, how many more home runs are you going to see from this guy? It's going to be tremendous. No, I got to take him number one. I'm not missing out on that. Sorry, guys.
Interesting.
You also would have taken Lonzo number one because you couldn't be the guy who passed up on him, and then you called him overrated, and now we're number one. So
Look at you slapping me for taking Lonzo when you wouldn't call him overrated last hour.
Calling him overrated, but I never would have drafted him number one.
Well, I don't know how many people were going to take Tatum number one, that's for sure.
I would have taken.
That wasn't going to happen.
I wanted Tatum if I was the Celtics. I just don't know that I could have justified it at one. But when it became to three, it was, for me, it was an easy opportunity.
Yeah. You could justify it at number one now. That's for damn sure after this first full year. No doubt about that.
A couple other interesting things on the Red Sox. The Chris Sale velocity debate maybe can get put to rest. He hit 98 and 99 yesterday. His fastball was down a mile an hour and a half. You know, he was last year 95, this year 93 and a half. Partly because I think they're telling him to save it a little bit so he doesn't wash out at the second half of the season. But he hits 98-99 yesterday. He also got 23 swings and misses, which was the most he had since an April start of last year. So he looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer that they had to start him in a game on the road against a last-place team when you've got this massive series with the Yankees coming up. But the problem was is they had a day off today, so you can't really push Chris Sale back two full days in the rotation.
Yeah, and you're right. You were complaining about that earlier. You want, because you're not liking the Pomeranz and Price twosome to start the season.
Severino and Pomeranz is the matchup tomorrow. I wonder what the spread is in Vegas for that game, about 6 runs?
By the way, Brady, just on a quick baseball note, we had one of our hosts at Fox works down in San Diego. Boy, was he letting the Padres have it. Can you imagine buying season tickets to the Padres? Instead of getting 81 games, you get 78 because they move 3 games to Monterrey, Mexico.
That's right.
And then they say, oh, by the way, it's going to be on Cinco de Mayo weekend. Oh, and by the way, the 3 games, it's against the Dodgers.
Yeah, and one of them turned out to be a no-hitter.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine telling your fan base we're taking 3 games away on Cinco de Mayo weekend and it's against the Dodgers and it's just too damn bad? That's insane. I can't believe that. All right. Coming up next, Monday, Mirages. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3.
Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN on a beautiful Monday out there. Well, still a beautiful Monday here in Southern California. What, 65 degrees out there, Rich?
Is that what it is?
63.
63 and beautiful. Perfect.
It's going to be in the 30s tonight.
Yeah, well. That's the way it goes.
By the way, Rich, I remember when I told you guys I ran into a lady that lived in Burlington for 13 years and she had a restaurant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Barbecue restaurant in Shelburne. It was a barbecue restaurant in Shelburne, if that helps you.
Kentucky Fried Chicken?
No, it wasn't Kentucky Fried Chicken. So I don't know, Rich. You're going to – maybe somebody on the Town Fair Tire text line could help us out, but I was just wondering if you knew that one. So
a barbecue on Shelburne Road. How many years ago was this?
Wow. Oh, boy. It could be about 20-something years ago.
Oof. Yeah, that eliminates a lot of people from this quiz.
You got to be an old man for that, that's for sure. All right, Brady, it is time for Monday Mirages.
Question number one. The Red Sox should make a run at Matt Harvey now that he's been DFA'd by the Mets. Real or mirage?
Oh, it's real. Of course they should make a run at him, as I told you about this a year and a half ago. Now you're paying bare bones minimum. You're getting him for 5 years. If the guy
What?
Not for 5 years, for $5 million, excuse me.
About 5 months.
Excuse me. Is it $5.6 million, Brady? Is that what it
yeah,
is?
I guess if he clears waivers, he could take a prorated veteran minimum. So it might end up being less than that. But if you traded for him right now, it would be $5.6 million.
But the Mets have to pick up the rest. He would not lose.
Yes, the Mets would be willing to pay some, I'm told.
Right. Yeah, but he would not. He's good. He will get his money. But
yes.
That's beside the point. Yes, it's real. They should go for him. One, because if he does revert back to his old ways, you've got a bargain. Two, you only have to, rent him. So if it doesn't work out, you can let him go. Three, it is insurance and backup in case you do need another starter, because I can't trust Price. We don't know what exactly is going to happen with Pomeranz. I think it's a win-win-win situation all the way around. No reason not to get him.
I couldn't disagree more. Mirage is in capital letters. An injury-riddled guy with who's an absolute tool in the clubhouse with an ERA of 7. No thanks. That's Mirage.
Yeah, I'll say it's Mirage unless he is willing to accept a minor league assignment right off the bat. I am not bringing, as you said, that baggage into my major league clubhouse, which is jiving right now to the point of having the best record in the American League, the best record in baseball. And even though Price isn't pitching like you want to over the last 3 weeks and Pomerantz has struggled, I still think I have more faith in them to turn it around. I have no room for him in my rotation. I have no room for him in my bullpen as it stands right now. And he's not going to try to figure it out on my time. If he wants to be in the minor leagues and can do it, then yes, I would take the flyer, but I'm not bringing him in with an expectation that he's likely going to have to start or at the bare minimum be in my pen. It's just too much of a risk for me. Question number two, the Yankees as it stands right now are a better and more complete team than the Red Sox, real or Mirage?
They are a better team. They might not be a more complete team because I'm still worried about the pitching staff, but if they get things right and Sonny Gray is going to be okay, they may have a better pitching staff also. So I think the Yankees are going to end up winning that division. I mean, the way they're playing right now, it's unbelievable. And the Red Sox are playing such a high level, and they still can't shake the Yankees. Yeah, the Yankees are a better team. I'm not so sure a more complete team, but they are a better team.
The key words in that sentence, in that question, is right now. The answer to me, therefore, begrudgingly, is real. I mean, you're catching them at the I can't even believe that they're throwing Pomerantz against Severino tomorrow. You talk about no chance. Of course, most of my predictions have been wrong, so I'm thrilled to make the prediction that they will lose game one tomorrow. I mean, right now, what if they won 15 of their last 16, whatever? Yeah. I mean, the Sox started winning 17 of their first 19. So the answer right now is absolutely real. And the key to me, not only is the back end of the pitching, although Montgomery's out, but they've just figured out a way to get to that bullpen and pitch just well enough to get to them. But when you've got Torres and you got, you know, Gleyber Torres winning a game yesterday, you've got Andujar doing some damage. You knew you were going to get plenty from the top of this order, but the bottom four hitters have made a difference, and it's somebody different every single night. Aaron Hicks with a big hit. Romine had a big hit yesterday. I mean, it just seems like 1 through 9, it's getting done every night.
And Domingo Germán with a no-hitter through 6 yesterday.
Now, who the hell is Domingo Germán?
Yeah, who most people have never heard of.
Right.
So I'll say it's real at this moment, too. I'm still worried about the pitching long-term, but it hasn't been – it's been far better than we expected. CC Sabathia has been great. Herman filling in was great yesterday. I think this team is younger. I think they are deeper. Their offense is certainly better. And yes, I am worried about the fact that Sandy Leon and Jackie Bradley Jr. can't hit their way out of a paper bag. So, yes, that is very much real right now. Question three, Monday Mirages. Albert Pujols got his 3,000th hit over the weekend. You are still excited to see a player hit that milestone. Real or Mirage, Arnie?
Oh, that's a Mirage. I could care less. Zero interest whatsoever. Zero interest. Matter of fact, when that movie, Mr. 3000, didn't even care about that damn movie either.
That's right.
No interest whatsoever. And by the way, Brady, correct me if I'm wrong. Did they stop the game and have him run around and wave to people? Was that in the middle of the game?
It was in the middle of the game, but he was also on the road, so he came out and was acknowledged, and his teammates came out to him. But it wasn't, you know, he didn't take a lap.
Lucky the fans didn't pepper him by throwing stuff at him. I'd say, come on, give him the baseball, let's move on. Enough of this. It was like a 10-minute delay or something. Then get out of here. Here's your 3,000 hits. It's like the Bad News Bears. Here's your damn trophy. Now get the hell out of here. Here's your baseball. Move on. Haul ass.
We're just not going to agree on anything on this, I can tell.
I guess not.
I loved it. I watched it over and over again. I thought it was cool the way the Seattle fans sort of, you know, were appreciative. Come on, Albert Pujols. I mean, is he that I guess Barry Bonds is, but Pujols is right there in the discussion of the greatest hitter of our generation. And when he gets to a significant thing like that, and he's still putting up numbers. I understand the last 4 or 5 years if he's gone downhill, but didn't he have 100 ribbies last year?
Yeah, no, power has been there, but his average has dipped.
Right.
I'll say it's real, too. I'm a fan of history. Not many players get to 3,000 hits, and we're a ways away from guys getting to 3,000 again. Miguel Cabrera is 300-plus away from 3,000. Now, he is off injured at this point. I have to think that if he can put 2 full seasons together in the rest of his career, that he'll get to it. But beyond him and Robinson Cano, who's 600 away, he'll get there. you're a ways away from anybody active who's even knocking on the door.
If there's one sport I love seeing history, it's baseball. By far my favorite sport as far as history goes. If I'm sitting at Fenway or I'm sitting even in front of a television and some guy's got a perfect game through six innings, I'm stopping whatever I'm doing. I want to watch the last three innings and see if he can get it. I just think it's fun.
Hey, Brady, I made up a trivia question about Albert Pujols. Ready for this one? What team lost their superstar and became better after they lost him? And matter of fact, I can't think of another team that lost their superstar and became better after in any sport and became better after they lost, except for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Celtics.
Yeah, the Boston Celtics. How about that? Question four, Monday Mirage, is on this Monday in the Huddle. Terry Rozier's play has been the biggest surprise of the 76ers and Celtics series. Real or Mirage?
Well, I would have to say pretty much real. If it wasn't the biggest, it's certainly right up there in the top two, for crying out loud. I mean, what he's been able to pull off, and it's really, though, I hate to give him all the credit, because from the coach to all the subs to just the team playing the way they are and banding together, it really, I don't know, it sounds corny, but it really is a team effort. But yes, Rozier is the biggest surprise so far in that series.
There we found one we definitely agree on. Yeah. I mean, he's putting up like 20-6-6 or something like that. I mean, those are instant all-star numbers when you think about it. I mean, who saw this coming? I say that's absolutely real. I mean, you could look at about three or four different Celtics right now, but he's at the top of the heap.
Well, he's shooting 42% from three also. He's been great in the fourth quarter. He doesn't have a turnover in the fourth quarter or overtime the entire playoffs. Wow. He's been amazing. That said, it's still Mirage. We saw him play well in round one. After round one, it was a surprise. Round two, it became an expectation that I at least thought that Terry Rozier would play well and hold his own. The biggest surprise has been the fact that Ben Simmons has played so poorly. That has been the biggest surprise.
Once again, a trick question on Monday Mirages for the second straight
week.
It
is not.
I think we're looking more at like a Celtics angle on this.
I'm looking at a series angle. Ben Simmons playing poorly and having 1 point for the guy who was a number one overall pick in the draft 2 years ago, for the guy who, whether you like it or not, is going to win Rookie of the Year this year. That guy having 1 point and his team being a, what did you say, minus 55 while he's on the floor?
Yep.
That right there is the biggest surprise. I had an expectation Rozier would be at least above average. I didn't have an expectation that Ben Simmons was going to be horrendous. Question number five and the final question. So Mel Kiper Jr. came out with a list of late-round draft picks that he thinks are going to be instantly impactful. Right near the top of his list was Miami wide receiver and Patriots slot receiver draft pick Braxton Berrios. So I'll throw this one out. You believe that Braxton Berrios can make an immediate impact on the Patriots in 2018, real or Mirage?
I'm going to say Mirage. I think he can make an impact. I don't know about immediate impact and how long it's going to take, so I don't want to be fooled on that trick word there. I did tell you, though, that this kid come in and really, you know, kind of, you know, have people start looking his way and say, wow, who is this kid? He was not on the radar his first 3 years at Miami. It was only the last year. That's because he had a lot of touchdowns. I think like 8 or 9 touchdowns in his senior year. That's how he got drafted, or that's at least how he got on the radar. I think he could be, obviously he's a project, but I think it could work out for him. Belichick certainly got a good pick there.
Yeah, I'm going with real too. I just think Berrios is, I mean, how happy must he have been to get drafted on draft night by the New England Patriots? I mean, he is the absolute prototypical guy to go to the Patriots. And he was a slot receiver at Miami.
Yeah.
Which is not the case in some of the guys that have had success. But, I mean, you're looking at and a lot of this is predicated with the part of the question about can he be an impactful rookie? Not sure. But I suspect a lot of it depends on whether Edelman's healthy. And that's a big if. But down the line, absolutely.
To me, it's a mirage. I just don't see the opportunity for him to get on the field consistently right now. Because I look at that wide receiver group, and I'm saying Julian Edelman is a lock on this team to play. Chris Hogan is the same. Malcolm Mitchell is the same. That's three. How many other receivers are you really going to have on this roster active? That's probably five. Jordan Matthews is number four in my mind. And then between Kenny Britt and some others, Philip Dorsett, those are your fifth guys. I just don't know where Braxton Berrios gets on the field enough to make an impact. Remember we were all geeking out about Austin Carr last preseason?
Yeah.
And he ended up not even on the roster either. Maybe he can make an impact in the future, but no, it's a mirage that he'll make an impact instantly.
McCraney had him as absolutely making the team. He had him as the rookie of the year, basically.
Who did?
Greeny, Mike Greenberg.
Oh, he had Berrios as the rookie?
No, the guy you just mentioned.
Oh, Carr.
Yeah, Austin Carr.
That's because he's a Jet fan and upset. So.
All right, there you go. Monday, mirages. On this Monday, 7th day of May. Brady, by the way, what's coming up on the Champlain Valley game night tonight?
Well, we're going to have a special guest in studio. Val Pallotta's going to join us. And a lot of you know the name, the Josh Pallotta Fund.
Yep.
We'll tell his story, and we'll talk about the upcoming Josh Pallotta Fund Memorial Hockey Tournament at 6:20.
By the way, Arnie?
Yes?
I've never heard you say the day of the year on this show, and you've said it three times. Is there something going on May 7th that you should tell us about? Is there a significance to this day?
Zero. Zero. I should have said, Cinco de Mayo? I should have pushed that, but that was a weekend.
No, I just noticed you just said May 7th, the seventh day of May for the third time, and I don't remember you saying that.
He does
that. That's good radio now. Yes, it's good radio. Really? The boss has talked to me and yelled at me and said, you got to give the date more. Need the date more. That's how the ratings go up.
Yeah, remember in early radio when we had to talk, give the time, like literally every 30 seconds?
No, my boss yelled at me. He goes, you know, sometimes instead of saying 3:45, you could say it's 3:45.
Or both. I was always taught to say, it's 3:45, 15 minutes before 4 o'clock here on Rock 107.
I go, because people don't know how to tell time. They're idiots. But I guess they don't know how to tell time. That's why they're taking the analog clocks out of the classrooms, because the kids don't know how to tell time. Unbelievable. All right, when we get back, what do the Celtics need to do to get the sweep? We'll finish that off. Coming up next,
Arnie injured himself playing basketball. Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Rich doesn't want me to give you the day or time, so we won't do that. I'll keep that to myself.
Oh, stop.
What do the Celtics need to do to get that sweep? They're up 3-0. Who would have thought they'd be in this position to get the sweep right now? That's just never has happened in the NBA where a underdog has won the first 3 games in the series, and I guess it's never happened that an underdog won the first 4 games in a series. We are seeing something historic here right now, guys.
Did any of the three of us pick Boston to win this series? I'm trying to recall.
No.
Because I sure didn't.
Nope.
I'll say I did, but I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. How convenient.
None of us had the Celtics winning, and what they have done is incredible. It's not just that they've won, it's the way that they've won. And yeah, there's been a little bit of luck involved. There's also been a great deal of great coaching involved, too. And I was looking at a back and forth on Twitter, and our old buddy Ryan Russillo, who used to, you know, still works at ESPN, but is, you know, no longer a radio host at ESPN, he said that Brad Stevens has done more with less than Greg Popovich ever did. Oof. And it's pretty... That's a pretty strong statement. Now, Arnie, you said earlier in hour one that Stevens has done a ton with less, but that's high praise.
It's high praise. I think everybody's starting to kind of say that also, so I think they're going to be on Russillo. They agree with that. I don't know. I mean, Popovich had, what's his face?
David Robinson.
David Robinson. Yeah. So when you have a big man like that, and by the way, if I remember correctly, Popovich fired the coach, I forget who it was, in the middle of a horrible year. He took over, and that's how he had inherited all these great picks. So, yeah, I have to agree with Ryan Russillo on that one.
Yeah, well, the Popovich thing, he's always had a superstar. Oh, I mean, is there ever been a year he didn't have a David Robinson immediately followed by Tim Duncan, and for a time the two of them together, which was impossible to stop, and then... I would say Kawhi Leonard after that. I mean, granted, he's out now, but look what's happened to the Spurs without him on the team.
Yeah, and I think what's amazing, too, about the Celtics, and another thing that Russillo brought up that does go under-talked about, is that this team has had to reinvent itself on the fly 3 times now. Mm. And when you talk about in-season coaching adjustments and in-game coaching adjustments, that's pretty remarkable. You go into the season with a plan about, okay, how are you going to utilize both Hayward and Irving? How are you going to get those guys together and involved and share the basketball, and what kind of set are you going to run for both of them? Then you go in and you lose Hayward instantly and you say, okay, now on the fly, how are we going to develop Tatum and Brown at a higher rate? How are we going to utilize Horford more as a focal point of the offense, whether he's scoring or passing? And then at the end of the season, you've got to say, okay, Now we're going to do this without Hayward and without Irving. And then, well, he doesn't offer you a ton offensively. How are you going to play for 20 games without Marcus Smart also?
Yep.
And that loses your defensive identity. So maybe he's even had 3.5 to 4 times where he's had to reinvent this team.
It's insane. I don't know. I can't remember in any sport. Look, think about this. We'll just keep it to the NBA. Take out your top two guys off any team. Just think like Cleveland. Take off LeBron and whoever.
Yeah.
Kevin Love. Can you imagine how teams would be crippled? Yet this Boston Celtic team is one game away from a four-game sweep and having to play Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. I never would have guessed that. That's insane.
Yeah, it really is. And the thing, too, about it is it was instant. They had to immediately, 5 minutes into the season, completely turn everything upside down. It's been right from the start. It's just been one thing after another.
I mean, and think about football, Arnie. We talk about the Giants and what their responsibility lies for their season last year. Well, look, that team lost Odell Beckham Jr. and Brandon Marshall, and instantly the offense was crushed. And then you look at teams that lose one player and their quarterback. The Packers lost Aaron Rodgers, and their season effectively ended. Now, obviously, there's other injuries and suspensions and things like that that take place at the NFL that make it a little more, you know, difficult to make it cut and dry like that. But bottom line is, you talk about losing your best players in the NFL, it cripples teams. And in the NBA, this team has somehow managed a way to,
well,
I mean, look at what happened to the Timberwolves without Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler missed, I want to say, like 2 months, and they went from the 3 seed to the 8 seed,
yeah.
And they still had Karl Anthony Towns and others.
On the other side, but look at Golden State when they missed Steph Curry. Doesn't seem like they really miss a beat. Now, of course, you don't want to lose him for any period of time, but when he's out, everybody else just picks it up. Now, I'm not saying lose Steph Curry and Kevin Durant or Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, your two best players like Boston did, but, you know, as Steve Kerr said, they can win it without Steph Curry. I used to laugh at that. I'm not laughing now.
No, well, that's where Durant steps in, and, I mean, if you've got to get Draymond Green to be Draymond Green and pick up nearly a triple-double every single night to make up for it. But, I look at the Golden State comparison and see instead of 4 superstars, they only have 3. I mean, Boston had to start relying on guys like Jaylen Brown and Rozier and Tatum and guys like that. And Semi Ojeleye starting and playing 25 minutes a game. I mean, it really was smoke and mirrors. I mean, I guess you could look at New Orleans as a team that picked up despite a huge loss. I mean, when DeMarcus Cousins goes down, you're losing 26-14, two-thirds
right.
The way through the season, but they seem to be okay without him.
Brady, what do you make of when Hayward left Utah and now they're better than ever? Doesn't that ring a bell, or doesn't that send up warning signs, or no, not really? I'm just curious.
I think it goes with what other people are starting to say, that Quinn Snyder is a better coach than people give him credit for. And you look at their team, and they brought in Ricky Rubio, and no, he's not a great scorer, but you bring in a guy who can distribute the ball and get it to some playmakers, and Joe Ingles kind of has that old man YMCA game where he pump fakes you and hits a 3 and he draws contact and gets to the line and all that. So, I don't think it's a negative reflection on Horford or on Hayward more so as it is a positive reflection on the Jazz themselves.
Yeah, plus the fact that the Jazz might have, I mean, he'll certainly finish 1 or 2 in rookie of the year, maybe 3. But I have said for so many years, ever since he came into the league, Rudy Gobert is a complete difference maker. I've wanted that guy on the Celtics forever. And if he's there, he is getting it done at both ends of the floor, and it's reflecting what the Jazz have been able to do.
And right, Donovan Mitchell.
Well, that's what I mean by rookie of the year.
Yeah. By the way, with that said, give me a prediction on the game tonight. Do they end it out in 4, or is this one going to have to go back in and play a 5th game?
Game 4s, when it's 3-0, are so hard to what are the Celtics in their history in Game 7s like? When they're up 3-0. I mean, game 4 is when they're up 3-0.
Oh, I don't know.
They're like 5-8, I think you wrote down. I think I saw that in the sheet.
Oh, I think they're 36-0 when leading in a series,
yes.
3-0.
Yes, but it's so hard to figure out what the mindset of the team that's down 3-0. And it's hard. I think it's hard to come up with a mindset of the team that's up 3-0. I mean, look, they've taken days off. I mean, you saw that Milwaukee game 6 on the road. They were putrid in that game. I've been nothing but wrong for the last week in my picks, but I think Philly wins tonight.
I'll say Celtics by 12.
Wow.
I'm
going
right.
with the Celtics also, but I think it's going to be a close one. It's going to have to be like a 3-point game, and they'll be barely escaping, and then they'll get the sweep. And I think it's important because, again, and remember I said this last week, Rich. I said, hit the dump button if I'm getting ahead of myself. they need to sweep this. That way they get a little bit of rest before they have to play Cleveland. You're like, oh, you're getting ahead of yourself. Not ahead of myself now, am I, huh?
Well, about the rest, what happens if both these teams sweep? Do they play in 2 days? Or do they have to wait for the Western Conferences to finish?
No,
before
I think they would play relatively quick.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be 2 days, though. I don't
know. No, but go Raptors. We could use a couple of extra days for LeBron to have to work as if it's made any difference.
That shot he hit the other night was like watching Arnie play.
That was one for the ages. That shot was, he's full momentum, straightforward, heading towards the left, falling out left side, takes a right-handed shot from the left corner and banks it in. I said it Friday. Just enjoy the ride.
Oh, it's unbelievable. We'll get to Last Story Standing as we finish out the show. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Chicago Bears rookie linebacker Roquan Smith. Well, this is why you don't keep things in your car. I guess somebody broke into his car. They stole a couple of his Georgia helmets from last season, three of his Georgia Bulldog jerseys from last season. They took a couple of his watches. By the way, everything they totaled about $50,000 or $60,000. The watches were Michael Kors and Kobe. Do you guys know those? I don't even know what the hell they are.
Yes,
I don't even
they're
know
if those are brands.
They sound expensive.
Yes, they sound expensive. One thing that was taken was his team-issued iPad from the Chicago Bears. So the with all the plays and all the information, so the Bears immediately wiped it clean. I don't know how they did that remotely, but they wiped it clean remotely, and the team was notified of the theft, so there was no compromise of any of the Bears' information. At least none that they know of. That's like a Greg Brady thing. Remember when Greg left the playbook there, and they thought they were getting all the thing? That was awesome. That was a big playbook. I love it. All right, Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley Game?
Well, Val Pilata is going to be in studio, and it's a tragic story, but it's an uplifting story, and we're going to talk with Val.
And believe me, she is one of the finest human beings there is out there, so I'm looking forward. Hopefully she's in the lobby so I can give her a big hug. We're old pals.
Yeah, she will be in here at 6:20.
Looking forward to it. A good show. One more show for me on remote. I'll fly back Wednesday, back in studio on Thursday. So for Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.